Hello there. My name is Chris Cook and welcome to TW Talks, the interviews podcast from 3 weeks Edinburgh. We are at Edinburgh Festival 2024, sitting in the lounge at Assembly George Square, right next to the club bar and all the studio venues. The festival is very much happening around us as we speak, and I am chatting to comedians who are performing at this year's Fringe. Today, Michelle Brazier, who has also performed at the Fringe in the past as one half of Double Denim. She's here this year performing her solo musical comedy show, Legacy. We are going to talk past, present and future, the story so far, this year's show and what is happening next. So I am back in my secret little corner of Assembly George Square. I have another performer has joined me to talk about her show at Edinburgh Festival 2024. I've got Michelle Brazier here. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Very good for you to come on this Friday afternoon. And we are getting, I mean, we're kind of almost on the home straight of the festival now.
I'm starting to feel that. I'm starting to feel the panic, the dread of the people's shows I haven't seen yet, things like that. Like, I'm starting to really feel the chaos of the end, which is great. I love it.
But it's good for you to give us 20 minutes of that very big schedule to come and talk about.
Hey, yes, you're welcome.
Your show this year, but I guess past, present and future is the format. So before we get onto this year's show, let's tell the story. But I mean, I guess we've only got like 7 or 8 minutes. So I guess a condensed version of the story. So when did you first start as a performer and moving into to comedy and the music side as well?
Okay, so it was so clear I was going to be a performer since I was a kid. I was a nightmare of a child. Like, I grew up in Wagga Wagga, teen pregnancy capital of Australia. Not a lot of performance opportunities, but I think I had this babysitter who was incredible. She was like always barefoot by the pool, just surrounded by dogs. She was really like a real hippie, and we picked strawberries and sang together. And I was like, I'm going to be this woman when I grow up. Like, it was just very clear. And I always sang. I would sing more than I would talk. Like, I was so annoying. And I wanted to be a singer, to be a pop star. And then I sort of slowly realized that I didn't look like a pop star. I was an ugly kid in high school, which was great. Like, I think one of the best things you can be as a performer of any kind is an ugly kid in high school. I think it's so important.
That's your advice for people starting out.
Yes, be ugly. If you can't be ugly, like, ruin it in some way. Do you know what I mean? Like, get yourself bullied. Get yourself a reason to have to prove yourself. Like, do not be in a position where things will be handed to you, because you just won't get good. You just won't. And you definitely won't get funny. That's my personal opinion. But yeah, and I went to musical theater school when I was 18. I was always doing community musicals. I figured I could do musical theater because, like, you could play character roles and stuff and you didn't have to be pretty or whatever.
So that was the original. It was like, okay, I like performing, I like singing.
Yes.
Musical theater's for me.
Yes, because I love acting and, you know, I didn't have much dance experience. We didn't have that much money growing up, so my parents could afford singing or dancing, so I had singing lessons. And I loved that, and I did, like, improv after school and all that, like, very cool kid stuff. But then, yeah, I got into this really fancy musical theater school when I was 18 years old, and I moved to Melbourne. And I loved it so much. But I also was like, hang on, wait, I have to say the same thing every single night. That's crazy. What if something goes wrong? What if something falls down? I'm not allowed to comment on it?
And that's something somebody else has written.
Yes, something somebody else has written. I'm saying some other idiot's words? That's crazy. So yeah, I really loved doing musicals, and I still do love doing musicals, but there was just something in me that needed to get out. It's just that weird, ugly kid that's desperate for attention, I think. And it's so clear, like, the weird kid to comedy pipeline is so well-worn, you know. It just became obvious to me. We had to write things at uni, like, when we were doing this music theatre course, we had to do a 10-minute cabaret. And I had just been through all of this stuff. Like, I'd had a hard time. My father had died quite suddenly. He'd been diagnosed with cancer and died a week later. I'd been in a house fire and had to learn to walk again. It was quite mad.
That's a lot of drama to pack in.
And they were like, you should write about this. And I was like, no, I think I want to write, like, a comedy about wanting to fuck Aladdin. And they were like, yeah, okay, sure, weird kid. But yeah, I did eventually go on to write about that stuff, but I was like, I want to be far away enough.
Yeah.
I don't want to be standing on stage crying. That's not comedy. I mean, it can be, but, you know, I just was like, oh, this needs to be funny to me before it's funny to an audience. They need to feel safe with me. I always think that when you're writing about something painful, I always think you owe it to your audience to not make them worry about you. and not make them want to like hug you and be like, oh my God, are you okay? You know, you want to make them feel inspired and hopeful. You don't want to make them feel worried and like give you a pity standing ovation. You know, I think that happens a bit, but I give pity standing ovations all the time when I'm like, you're amazing. Oh my God. But you know, I still think I don't want my audience to feel that way about me. Which again is because of my gigantic ego maybe, but yeah, I don't know. I think, and I started writing and it was funny. And then I joined a comedy group called, I started a sketch group called Backwards Anorak.
Yeah.
And Karen Corrin from Gilda Balloon saw us at Melbourne Fringe.
So the first sketch comedy was, were you still doing the musical theatre stuff? That was all happening at the
same
time?
We met at music theatre school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but we were the weird kids at music theatre school. Like we would always do like sketches at parties. And but we, you know, you can be the cool kids and be the weird kids when you're at drama school. So that was really fun. And we were like, okay, yeah, people would maybe pay to see this. So we started writing shows, me and Vince Malaise, who's incredible, still one of the funniest people in the entire world. And I started doing sketch comedy with Auntie Donna, which is still a sketch comedy group that I work with. And I started Vince and I in Backwards Anorak, we brought on a girl called Laura Frew. And then we kept coming back to Edinburgh as Double Denim, which is like another sketch group.
So you mentioned Karen Corrin. So that's the Gilda Balloon founder.
Yes.
And Karen has always had her eye on talent coming from Australia.
She has.
One of her passions.
Yes.
So was that how you ended up performing here for the first time?
Yes. She brought us over. She said, do you want to do 3 p.m. and 150 seater? And we were like, that sounds crazy. Yes. And we did it. And we had the most incredible time. And it was amazing. And when I was over here, you know, I think my whole world changed, but I lost my brother when I was over here. And so Edinburgh now feels for me like I'm visiting my brother in a way, you know, because it's the last place I had a brother.
Yes.
And Gilda Balloon as a family just rallied around me. I feel like the entire Fringe really rallied around me. And I think that's why I keep coming back.
Wow. So was that the first time you were at the festival?
It was the second time. It was my second time. Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I did a show that night. Like I had said to Katie and Karen Corrin of Gilded Balloon, I had said to them, I want to do a solo show as well as Backwards Anorak. It's probably not going to sell as well as Backwards Anorak. Do you have any slots? And they were like, we have like 12:15 a.m.
Wow,
in the Turin, which is a 40 seater. Yeah, late night. I was like, yeah, I'd love to do my show. It's called Space Tortoise. They were like, great. We won't charge you. Just come and do it. So I did it and it was great. And I remember that night I did my show, the night that my brother died, I did my show and I had this bit in it where I asked the audience, have you brought your snow globes? Which obviously they never had, but I just wanted to show them my snow globe. And then everyone in the room, because Gilda Balloon had like raised all this money and given everyone snow globes, everyone held a snow globe in
blimey.
The air. And it was so beautiful. And I just will never forget it. It was just such a magical experience. And I think like, yeah, I think that's why I keep coming back. I know that's not the question you asked, but yeah, and now obviously I work in film and TV and still do a lot of sketch comedy, but I write my own one-woman shows and I'm doing that like with air commas because there are always one-woman shows with one man in them.
Yes.
My partner, Tim Lancaster, who plays guitar and plays all the other characters.
It's just you on the poster.
It's just me on the poster, which he comments on only occasionally.
So I guess, so you mentioned obviously, so you did the sketch shows and the duo show and then, but you started doing the solo shows early on, obviously, because you were doing this albeit late night, smaller venue one.
Yes.
What was the first year here at the Fringe where the sort of the solo show became the main show?
It was, I did Average Bear, not this year, not last year, the year before. So what is that, 2022 maybe?
Yes.
Yes, 2022.
So that would be the, oh no, we were properly back after the pandemic in 2022.
Yes, that was the back. That was the year when it was like, yeah, we're back, baby. And I did my show Average Bear, which was the show that was about the Burns and about my brother and
so
about
that
my
was,
father.
Yes, so that you were, that was when you were ready.
That was the Dead Everyone show,
yeah.
But it was also about a bear who's afraid of hibernation. And I did that and I, you know, it went really well. It had gone really well in Melbourne. I sort of did it in Melbourne Comedy Festival and I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. But it turned out people were very excited and quite hungry for like a what's she going to do by herself, which was really nice. And then, I got nominated for the big award and in Melbourne and I was like, oh, okay, maybe this is like something I might be able to do. And since then I've just been doing that. But it was very special to do Average Bear here. And I got a transfer over to Soho in London and, you know, it was all very special and lovely. So I think that definitely has changed the trajectory of my life, writing that particular show, Average Bear, and then, you know, having it in Melbourne and here. And, you know, it's a book now, and we're working on, you know, other things, and it's really nice. It's very nice.
And so with your solo shows, I mean, I guess, I think you can tell that all that background you talked about, the musical theatre, sketch comedy, I mean, even though it is a solo show and it's you talking to the audience, I think that does come through, doesn't it? In that sometimes almost you are kind of playing a character. And then other times it feels more like you are doing stand-up. And, of course, there's the songs.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think one of the best things you can be as a comedian is, like, acting trained. Because some of it, you do have to, like, if an audience is not enjoying it, you have two options. You pretend they are, and then the people who are enjoying it don't know that it's not going well for you. Or you turn on them, and then the people who were enjoying it, you ruin it for them. And also, you have no idea what's going on. I had a terrible show on Wednesday, last Wednesday. I was like, that show sucked. And I had invited friends and I was so embarrassed. And I was like, well, that was a huge bomb. And then I got a 5-star review. You have no idea what's going on. You just don't know. So I think it's, acting training is really handy to just turn on and go, you know what, pretend it's going well. If it's not, it's fine.
But I think it's interesting because you're clearly telling a story, and you mentioned obviously the person joining you on stage, although is there to play musical instruments, also does participate in the telling of the story.
Yeah, it's a script. Yeah.
But then there are definitely bits where it really feels like you're bantering with the audience, and I never know whether do you sometimes feel, but you've got to, and also I guess the story is setting up the songs, isn't it? So how do you balance the sort of really interacting with the audience and then sticking to the script and telling your story and setting up the next song?
So for me, it's about rhythm. So if I'm going to break the rhythm and therefore, you know, break the tension too early or not give the song the build it needs or the joke the build it needs, then I won't interact. But if it's not going to ruin the rhythm, if there is an opportunity to interact with the audience, I will take it. I have not been diagnosed with ADHD, but I think, like, if you're in this room and you have the privilege of seeing live comedy, I think we owe it to each other to experience it. And I think that was something that I felt was missing in the musical theater world. And, you know, you see it more and more, and things like Operation Mincemeat, and you're like, you know, if something went wrong, one of those actors would improvise something and it would be great. And I think that we need more of that, you know, more joy in large productions. Not that there's no joy in it, but just the live, bring the live back to live. That said, don't come to my show and heckle. I don't like it. I don't like it.
So I guess we've described the format of the show, but maybe tell us this year's show. Tell us the name, the theme, the story you're telling.
Yes. So this show, it's called Legacy, and it's about sort of grappling with what a legacy is for someone who doesn't necessarily want to have children. And sort of, you know, I go through a lot of things. I find an envelope with $10.50 in mostly coins. I'm handed it at a cinema. When I'm asking for my tickets, they can't find my tickets, and they just find this envelope that is the brand of the cinema. It's got $10.50 in mostly coins, and it's got written on it, Michelle Brazier. And I have no idea why I would be owed this money. It's not for me, because I don't go to the cinema.
And I guess the key point is, because if that happened to me, I have a very common name.
There
are so many Chris Cooks. It'd be like, okay, immediately obvious, okay, there's one of the many, many, many other Chris Cooks I've stumbled across on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But the point is, you have a very unusual name.
I have an unusual name, and I've never met another Michelle Brazier. I rarely meet a Brazier. Like, it's very rare, especially in Australia. So I was very taken by the whole thing. I was like, oh my God, there's another version of me. I need to find her. And so I'm sort of on this mission to find her. And while I'm trying to solve that, I'm also coming to Montreal for the first time to do Just for Laughs. And I'm over in Edinburgh, and I'm in New York City filming some stuff. And I had a medical situation before where I got a Bartholin cyst. Google it if you dare. And it was horrendous. And I'd been through this surgery, which I recently have found out was an inhumane surgery that they don't do anymore. Which is great to know. And this was 2022. This is when I was doing Average Bear. So that was that very trip, which is quite mad to think about, because I've got these as two separate memories, but they were all happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And then, so I was in quite a lot of pain, and on the way home, I was in a failed landing, which was fine, and most people will fight. Like, some people.
I mean, the way you describe that in the show, it sounds like a failed landing doesn't sell it.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, it was quite scary. So it was like, you know, in theory, it was a plane crash. But when you say I was in a plane crash, people expect like,
yeah,
you know, so it's somewhere between. It was the plane came into land and we were in a storm and bad turbulence. And I think essentially what happened was the pilot landed when they shouldn't have landed. There was only one runway open. As soon as we tried to land, they closed that runway. And we came into land, we bounced a bunch of times, and then the plane sort of flipped on its side. There's a name for this, but it gets caught in like a wind tunnel, basically. And it just flipped. And so the wing that I was sitting along was just touching the ground, like sort of scraping along, like making a divot in the ground alongside the tarmac. And then we just took back off. And the pilots didn't say anything for a really long time. And it brought back that whole thing of like legacy and being obsessed with this other version of myself.
Yes, because if this was the end, what would the line be?
Exactly. Like if I go, what is my legacy? You know, if this is it, what have I left behind? And then recently, I don't know, have you seen the show?
I have.
You've seen the show. Yeah, so I don't know when you saw it, but very recently I've had that same Bartholin cyst come back, which is awful. And I went to the hospital and, you know, spoke to the nurses and things. And it's funny because I've sort of realized like, yes, okay, like, I'm not going to have children because I want to live for me and I want to keep making people laugh. And I want to live for that weird kid, the ugly kid who everyone was like, you're not going to be pretty enough to play whatever. And I got, here's the thing, for all the ugly kids out there, I got to play Elle Woods in Legally Blonde because I grew into my face. And do you know what? That, good for me. Good for that little girl. Like, she really earned that and I'm glad she did it. But I think, it's about going, okay, this is enough. Like, what I'm doing, this is important enough for both me as a child and for other people. You know, comedy can mean a lot. The amount of people who came up to me and who still come up to me in all corners of the world, in America, in the UK, in Australia, and say, your comedy got me through the lockdown. I used to always be like, that's crazy because we have nurses, we have doctors. But now I'm trying to be like, do you know what? Just let it be important for them. You know, you don't have to believe it. Don't let your ego hear it. But it's beautiful that it's important for people and that people needed a laugh and that we were there.
Yeah, and I guess during the pandemic, although, you know, obviously, yes, so people who actually have the virus, the heroes in the hospitals, etc.
Absolutely,
but,
yeah.
But
and
actually,
the
many, many more
supermarkets and things like that.
All of the logistics, goodness. All of that, 100%. Yeah. But then actually, I think many, many more people had their mental health shook by COVID than actually their physical health.
Oh,
and that's
yes.
where the comedy, the culture comes in.
I think so, yeah. I mean, we need stories for hope. And there was such a lack of hope. And we were there telling our stories and being silly. And I think, you know, being silly and hope are so linked. And that's why I think, you know, comedians will pretend that they're cynical, but they're not. Of course they're not. Why would they be doing this? You're not a cynic. You're just scared. Like, you're scared because you have hope. And that's such a beautiful thing. You know, we have hope. That's why we do this. And I love that.
I'm going to ask a cliche question for comedians who do music and do songs, which is, which comes first, the routine or songs? But I guess particularly with yours, because like a lot of music comedy, the songs are all standalone and then there's sort of bits in the middle to join the songs up. Whereas you are very much, I mean, almost is like a one-man musical and you're telling a story and the songs. So to you, do you start with the story and then write the songs to fit it?
I do, yeah. I write with the story first. I decide, so when I'm making a show, I go, okay, what do I care about? Like, what am I thinking about right now? What do I want to write about? And then I go, how do I want people to feel at the end of the hour? And then that makes me decide what kind of style the music is. And then I write the story. I write the story as if it's for a storytelling night. I go to storytelling nights and just have the story, no jokes. But I record myself. And when I'm in front of an audience, I will just make jokes. And they'll be better than I can make in front of a computer. So I record them and then I put them into the script and then they're the jokes for the show. So I'm not going out to a comedy audience trying to tell the stories because then I know I'll just be writing bits and jokes and it won't be true to the story I'm trying to tell. So I really try and stick in like, you know, even like poetry nights, things like that. I'm like, I want to be in this space. And then I write the songs where I think the songs should be or where, you know, often I'll come into a, like a work in progress with like three songs and then all my comedian mates will be like, this should be a song, this should be a song, this should be a song. I'm like, fuck you. But they're always right. They're almost always correct. So it's nice.
So it sounds like that the show goes on quite a journey.
Yeah,
before
I think
the finished product is then to be performed.
Yeah, which I think is true of everyone's show. Even if you are like a traditional stand-up who's doing like one-liners, I think it still goes on a journey. It's pretty amazing the work that people do year after year. I mean, I don't need to tell you that, but it is. Like, when I think audiences should be aware of that, you know. I think sometimes when you go and see a show and you're like, oh, this got like a 2 or a 3-star review or whatever. They're like, but somebody spent an entire year on it. Like, don't do that. Like, don't say anything. Like, give it four or shut up is my, that's my big theory. But like, yeah, it's just really interesting to see. But then also at the same time, it is a product, you know, it's a product, which is that's the problem with art, I guess. But it's amazing the effort that people go to.
I mean, it's tricky with reviews, isn't it? I think because part of you is like, do we still even need reviews in the social media, everyone showing age? But I think at this event, people generally are, no, we do need reviews.
You want them, yeah.
Because I guess if nothing else, a lot of performers who come here, the plan is to take the show around the world.
And you can say, in Edinburgh,
and
it got
the reviews
this many
are really
stars.
Valuable for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then I know there are some journalists who don't publish anything less than a 3-star. They'll just say, if I don't like it, I won't write the review.
Well, I think you shouldn't publish a 3-star. Here's my thing. I'm currently writing about like shame and judgment. So I'm very interested about this. But I think if it's a 1 or 2, go for it. Because they've probably earned that 1 or 2. If they haven't, they'll find it funny.
Yeah.
But if it's a 3, it means nothing to us as performers. And exactly. I know that's a contention for reviewers because they're like, no, 3 is good. 3
well,
is fine.
Well, that's exactly it. It's 3 is a fine show, but you can't do anything for 3.
You can't do anything with a 3. It makes you want to kill yourself. And also people will see a 3 and go, I'm not going to go see that. It's just 3 stars.
And even if there's a really good quotable quote that you can use, you're still like, oh, but it was a 3-star.
Exactly. And like people will use like, it's very, but I mean, I don't know, like who is the job for? Is it for us or is it for the general public? Like it's, you know, but it is very difficult to navigate. I could never be a reviewer.
And then you end up in, I feel 4 ends up being a very big category.
4 is a big category. 4 is a big category.
And you start thinking, maybe we should start doing 4.1, 4.2.
Yeah, yeah. I know I have a friend who got, 4.1 would be great actually. I had a friend who had a reviewer in who's quite well known recently, and they had standing ovation and the reviewer was on their feet and everyone was like, yes! And it was like, great show. And then they came out as 3 stars. And they were just like, what's going on? But yeah, it's very funny. And also, you know, they are valuable. They are. They just are.
So let's move on to the future. So let's first of all talk about the future for the show. So what are the plans beyond August this month? Or Edinburgh this month?
Yeah, so I think I'll be touring. So I've done it obviously in Australia before. Yeah. I've done Sydney and Melbourne. And I think I will do a little UK tour of this one. The question is though, because I've only done Average Bear at Soho. I haven't done a tour of Average Bear. So the question for the UK really is like, am I touring Average Bear next or am I touring Legacy next? Because I've done a tour of Reform, which is my second show and my favorite show also at the moment. I think like Average Bear is the most moving. Reform, my second show, is the best and most fun show for me to do, and then Legacy probably has the best jokes in it, maybe. I don't know. I'm trying to give them all. I love all my children equally.
It sounds like you do a trilogy tour. Is that what
it is? Yeah, trilogy. I have all the music is on Spotify and it's called like the trilogy mixtape or something like that. But yeah, and people come to the show and they say, we've completed the trilogy, you know. So now I have to start something new, which is absolutely no pressure on me whatsoever. But I'm going home to Melbourne to launch my book, and then I will go to Sydney to do a musical written by Lou Wall. Have you come across Lou Wall? Yeah, so I'm excited to do that. That will be really nice. And it will be nice to say someone else's words for just a few months. But they let me do whatever I want. I'm stunt cast now, baby. So I'm allowed to, I have free reign, which is going to be really fun, actually.
And then beyond the solo shows and other than that project, because obviously you're still doing some of the sketch stuff. You said you have other projects as well.
Yes,
so you have other things
on
the horizon.
Donna and yeah, we're always making silly little things and yeah, trying to get some TV shows up and working on other people's TV shows, which is always really fun. We've got another season of, I work on a TV show called YOLO Crystal Fantasy, which is like it's Adult Swim. I think it's Channel 4 here. I don't know, but we've done another series of that, which is really fun. And yeah, I'm just kind of busying my little butt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going to go to the US and yeah.
And, I guess let's, on one level, hopefully not too many more nearly plane crashes on the way, although it makes great material.
It makes great material.
Shows.
It honestly is like, people don't want to travel with me. My friends don't want to travel with me because they're like, if you're writing a show, I don't want to be anywhere near you because I just attract chaos. Like if I write for TV, if I was trying to write this story, you'd be like, that's too much plot. That's unrealistic. That's not happening to one main character. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's a curse. Maybe I need to find a witch while I'm in Edinburgh. Anyway.
So let's do the listings for people who are in Edinburgh this month. They've still got a week to see the show. So give us the venue, the times, etc.
Gilded Balloon at 7 p.m. It's at the Paterhoose because they don't have TV it this year. It's being renovated. So come find the Paterhoose.
And you're in the I always think when I've come to Edinburgh Festival for a very long time. I used to live in Edinburgh. So I know about the secret theatre in the basement of Adam House. But yes. I always think for people who come for the first time and they walk into a building that is clearly a building full of big rooms that Gilded Balloon turn into venues. Yes. And then you go into the basement, it's like, these are the proper fit.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's such a luxury. And the wallpaper down there is so like, okay. it's really nice. It's the seats are permanent. They're made of fabric. It's crazy. And the stage is real. And yeah, it's really, it's a joy to be not in a shipping container, you know? A real joy.
And finally, where can people find you online?
Oh, at Michelle Brazier with an S. You can find me. I'm very Googleable. As I said, I'm rare.
Because you're not the only one.
But yeah, very, very nearly, yes.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.